Should I go ahead and start with my screen share?
You can go ahead and share. I'll go ahead and introduce.
Okay.
Welcome everybody to Masterclass for tonight, 10/27/2022. I've been doing dates, so I don't want to mess that up for the year. We do have Scott Tebebe.
Yeah, you said it right first time.
I said that right? Okay, thank you. And yeah. Brake McCann tonight, who will be presenting, starting with Scott. Welcome, everybody. Glad to see you here. And enjoy.
Go ahead. All right. So, guys, today we're going to be doing a presentation around malware analysis. We're going to kind of go over what is malware analysis, the purpose of it, some of the tools that go into it, and we'll finish off with some questions as well. All right. All right. So what is malware? So malware is just it's malicious software. And it, for short, they just call it malware. Obviously, if you're a stickler for English and vocabulary. So all malware is just it's like a disease. You go to the doctor, you tell the doctor your symptoms, the doctor treats your disease. And that's what malware is. So some of the reasons why you would get malware is maybe someone wants to rob you of your Bitcoin. Or maybe someone wants to get back at you. Maybe as a former employee that's kind of upset, or a former whatever is upset with someone and they want some retribution. And that goes for the same with revenge and reputational damage. The reputational damage is a big one because if you get breached with some malware, it can cost you greatly. I can go into detail a little bit about that a little bit later. Some common examples of malware, stuff like botnets, which are zombie computers. You've got worms, which replicate themselves across the network. Now imagine that. We've got Trojans. They're designed as something. Let's say, for example, you might see an icon on your desktop that says Internet Explorer. Nope, that's just the icon. That's something else running in your background, though. And you got spyware that is covertly designed to steal whatever data that they have, whatever data you got going on. Adware, which is just a bunch of ads popping up all over the place. You got ransomware. Well, I think if we do some English here, they'd hold your data for ransom. All right. Next slide. All right. So what is malware analysis? Malware analysis is just it's the investigation of, I'll just read word verbatim here, investigating the characteristics, functionality, origin, and effects of malware to understand its fundamental parts, source code, as well as to lessen the threat and stop future occurrences. So an analogy that I want to use here is, let's say you're a scientist in a lab and you want to understand how a virus works, like a physical virus. You want to understand how it works, what does it do, the effects that it has, and then you want to kind of test it on guinea pigs, lab rats. But we'll go into a little bit more detail about that a little bit later. Okay. All right. So static analysis. So all static analysis is something that it takes note of the details and the architecture of a file in question. So let's say, for example, let's say you have somebody emailed you a document. Let's say it's a Word document. For all you know, this is a legitimate document. But if somebody takes figuratively speaking, takes a magnifying glass to it and analyzes a little bit further, puts it under the microscope, you can kind of see that this isn't the normal, Word document. So some of the items that can be in on a Word document that, well, any document, any file, what we would be looking for in static analysis is things like hash values, malicious strings embedded in the code, you know, things like metadata, when the file was created, you know, the username of the person that was created by, you know, little details like that. Think of it as when you say you take a picture of your phone, you can go and you can look at the date, and some phones and some pictures, you can even see like the location of where the picture was taken. So in a nutshell, all static analysis is you're just gathering the information. That's it. Just gathering the information. And, you know, sometimes this is enough, sometimes it's not. So in times when it's not, you would implement dynamic analysis, but we'll get there down the road. So some of the tools that we use for static analysis are VirusTotal, hybridanalysis.com, Jocktee malware scan, and Screenshot Machine. So you start by submitting a file, and this screenshot right here that we're looking at, it's been taken after, you know, I uploaded a malicious file. I'll actually go through it live in a live demonstration here shortly. And what it does is in this first screenshot is a list of vendors, starting with who found the submitted malicious files. So you see, as you can see, they're like Adware, Alyak, just different little vendors that people upload malicious files to, and it all kind of works together. They all kind of work in unison with each other. And then in the following screenshot, you see a display of the hash values. You see MD5 here, you see SHA-1, you see SHA-256, all these little hashes. And in a static analysis, you know a file has been tampered with if the file hashes are different. Once those change, it's been tampered with, bottom line. So let's say I'm sending somebody a Word document, and you know, all they do is view it. If they send it back to me and I check the hash values, it should match the same as when I sent it. Now, if those hash values change, that means that the doc has been modified to some degree. Now, to what? It can be non-malicious, it could be malicious, you never know. But that, think of that as like part of the DNA. Then in the last screenshot, it just shows like the process tree of what happens when, you know, the file is open, or what the path is and whatnot. So after static analysis, we're going to move on over to dynamic analysis. And the point of dynamic analysis is to observe the behavior of malware in a runtime state. So let's think of static analysis as, you know, you're just gathering information, and you may develop a theory from the information that you have. But then, okay, now you got to go and do, you know, a trial and see exactly what happens. Let's say, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of those study groups where they go and do a test to test a theory to see how that works. That's kind of more like what a dynamic analysis is. So in a dynamic analysis, you would do things like run code. You're trying to find out, what does it do? When does it do it? And how it's doing whatever it does. And usually this is produced in like a sandbox. Typically, there's two ways that some people do it. Some people do it on just like a actual spare device that, you know, they don't really care about, or they do it in a virtual machine. And, you know, let's say you want to test something out. You have, you spin up a VM using, you can use VMware, you can use VirtualBox, you can spin up any type of VM. It could be a Windows VM, a Mac VM, a Linux VM, any type of environment. And then from there, you can run the code and you can see the behavior and see what happens. You know, you want to look for things like the CPU spiking, what is the disk usage like, is the is my computer moving a little bit slower? I'm just observing the behavior from that point. So in the dynamic analysis tools, we can use things like Wireshark. You can use Task Manager, actually. You can use one that I really like called any.run. And then there's one that I kind of took interest in called Ghidra. So in the screenshot that you're looking at, this is from Wireshark. And you can see here packet list pane. And then what's happening here is Wireshark is capturing all the traffic on a given network. And then if you click, you know, you can click on a given packet and expand it in a view. And you can view like the metadata of what's going on. So as long as you're running, if you see the little shark fin right here, you hit that and that'll kind of, no, sorry, there's actually like a green start button. It's not this sharp thing. It's like a green start button. It'll start capturing all the traffic on your network. And until you hit stop, it's just going to keep capturing traffic. Anything that's coming in and out of your network, Wireshark is picking it up. So this is FYI, beware logging on to public Wi-Fi like Starbucks. You'd be surprised. Then, all right, so we have hybrid analysis. So in this instance, you use hybrid analysis. Okay, so let's say, so static malware analysis can't detect sophisticated malicious codes, and dynamic malware analysis might not succeed in detecting sophisticated malware as they hide in the presence of a sandbox environment, right? So this approach is technically the best approach overall. However, from a business perspective, the cost and the accuracy kind of forces organizations to choose a method of analysis carefully. So hybrid analysis is just a combination of both static and dynamic, but depending on your budget, you have to kind of pick one or use more or less of one or the other, depending on what the issue is. And that's just kind of like a quick overview of hybrid analysis and how it's used and when it's used. All right. So before I play this, I'm just going to give you a quick overview of what's going to happen. So I'm just going to demonstrate. I actually recorded this video right here, but this is just going to be a demonstration of both static analysis and dynamic analysis. So I'm doing a hybrid analysis here in this video, and I'm going to use some of the tools that we discussed earlier. So I'm going to go ahead and play it. Let me know if you can hear the sound. Can you guys hear?
No, I don't hear any sound.
No.
Okay. All right. In that case, one second.
You can stop sharing the presentation and then reshare with sound.
All right. And let me do that. One second.
There you go. Yeah, close that down.
There we go.
And then there's that toggle include computer sound.
Yep, I see it. There we go. So go back to our slide here. All right.
Hello, Master Class.
Can you guys hear?
Yep.
All right, perfect.
My name is Scott. Today we're going to be doing a demonstration of malware analysis. Now, this is going to be a very basic demonstration due to time constraints and brain cell constraints. We don't want to go too deep into this because this isn't exactly easy, but the basic version will get you the gist of what is happening whenever someone's doing a malware analysis. All right, well, let's go. First thing we're going to do, we're going to download a suspicious file. How do we know this is suspicious? Well, I've been testing it, and let's just say we'll find out. All right. download MS Toolkit. Right? We're going to download it to our downloads folder. Okay? Oh, man, what do we see here? Failed virus detected. When you see something like this, that tells me that my antivirus more than likely is the one that blocked it from downloading. Let's check and see why. So in my case, I use Windows Security, sometimes known as Windows Defender. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to come here to protection history. Boom. All right. As you can see, I've done a number of takes. Sixth take, Jake. How many times have I said that in a recording? All right, so we're going to try to expand this here and see what is going on and see if we can get some information from our antivirus. So obviously, if we can see here, the threat's been blocked. It's been detected as a Trojan. All right. And where the file was going to be downloaded to was my downloads folder, as you can see. It was going to be downloading from a web file from here. And if we do a quick static analysis here, which is what we're doing a static analysis. All right, we see that there's a URL. Interesting. Now, do we want to copy this URL and paste it in one of our web browsers on our local device? I don't think so. That's probably not a good idea. But what we can do is we can plug it in to a dynamic analysis tool. That's right. And as we can see, this is the URL right here, ends in .zip. So we're going to copy this. All right. Now let's open up our dynamic analysis tool. Any.run. It's a really cool tool where you can upload files and you can put in URLs. Normally we would upload the file, but we're not going to do that in this case because my antivirus blocked it, which is awesome. Did its job. So alternative is enter the URL. So what any.run is going to do is it's going to spin up a Windows 7 VM. And once we put this URL in here, you'll see it spin up. We're going to try to play with the file, run with the file, see what happens, see its behavior, see what happens on the network. We're going to see a lot of things. As you can see here, we're on a timer. So what we can do is we can add some time because we don't know how long we're going to take, right? Okay, looks like it won't let you go past 5 minutes, which is cool. You'll see some processes pop up over here on the right, and you'll see some more information popping down here on the left. But we'll get to that here in a moment. So why is this a dynamic analysis? It's because now we are in motion. We're going to try to run the file. We're seeing what's happening live. And since we've already done our dynamic analysis, we've already gathered information. Now we're going to test and see what happens. All right, so let's go ahead and try to open it. Right. So as you can see here, this is a zip file. So let's see if it'll let us extract it. And we're going to extract to the desktop since that's the easiest place to extract things to. All right. Minimize this. Let's look on our desktop for this file. All right. We see it here. Still looks like it's in a zip. So I'm going to try it again. Extract here. All right. Ah, enter a password. Why is it asking that? Well, let's look here. In the original zip file, we saw password for, it should say password for archive. Yep. Let's open this up. All right. We don't see anything in here. So let's assume that there is no password to follow or to enter. All right. So we're just going to come and press enter. The specified password is incorrect. All right. No big deal, right? Let's still go back to the zip folder. and see what we can see what else we can come up with. Let's see what we see inside of it. All right, let's see if we can open it that way. All right, I see executables in here. I see readme.txt's in here. All right, well, we're not gonna quite open those yet. Let's see. Let's first open up a task manager. And let's look at performance. Let's see if anything goes haywire when we try to run the exe. Let's see what happens. Even though it's still in the zip folder, let's still see what happens. All right, still being asked to put in a password. We don't see anywhere for a password, and that's okay. Ah, let's see what we have over here on the right. So I see some more whatnots popping up here. These are more processes, by the way, as you can see right here, processes. Let's click on them and see what happens. All right. No verdict. Look down here, it says no verdict. All right. Username admin. This is who was trying to open it. More info. Click on that. Okay, modifies the phishing filter for Internet Explorer. That doesn't sound too good. Ah, can't edit any more time, so we gotta hurry up. So what happens when you're on the free version? All right, so again, you can continue to click on these and look at the information presented down here. Then I'll see a warning, application launched itself. All right, that means that more than likely there was something trying to run in the background if it tried to launch itself. All right, these two say no suspicious events. All right, manual execution by user. Okay, that's good, that's us. All right, so if you look here, these are just the HTTP requests. You don't see any red. Red is bad, green is good. All right, connections. Oh, we already see some red. This is reputation. Reputation for this is malicious, okay? Reputation for this, whitelisted. So that means we're good to go here. All right, let's look at the DNS requests as our time runs down. All right, so malicious reputation for this domain. But also we look here and we see no threats. But just because we don't see any threats, that doesn't mean there's anything, you know, that doesn't mean it's good to go. That just means there was no reported threats or no threats found. All right, and our timer is up. So on the next slide, we can kind of discuss this a little more.
All right. So before I get into kind of the goals upon graduation, did anybody have any questions about what we just watched?
I'll ask. I have some notes jotted down, so I'll ask after Blake's presentation when it's the Q&A.
Okay.
But yeah,
okay,
good job. Interesting.
Awesome. So, all right.
Quick question.
That
was any run, and that's basically for if you just want to check if the URL is malicious or not, correct?
It can be a URL, it can be for a file, either one.
Okay, all right. So any run, thank you.
Yep, no problem. Any dot run.
Okay, any dot run, I got you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. All right. So that was my malware analysis presentation, but I also wanted to kind of touch on my goals upon graduation, as I am going to be done here in a few weeks. It's crazy. I started last August and I didn't know what to expect, really. So this whole course, this whole program kind of got me moving in a direction that I wanted to go. So I've gotten exactly out of it what I was looking for. Now I know I want to get my Security Plus certification after graduation. Obviously, I couldn't do it during because that's a lot. I'm currently working in the field as an endpoint security engineer. But after graduation, obviously, I'm going to have a lot of extra time. So I want to see if it's possible to get a second gig and see how that goes. I'm kind of in learning phase right now. I just like learning a lot. And, you know, you really learn a lot on the job. So I want to see what else is out there and see if I can do a double dip. One thing I'm really big on is mentorship. I'm already kind of trying to groom my nieces and nephews to get into cybersecurity. But also, I'm probably going to, you know, just start reaching out to other classmates or even undergrads that are still, you know, may have some questions that may want to, you know, find a direction of where they want to go or what they want to do after they graduate. Because not everybody has an idea even still after graduation. So, you know, if anybody wants to talk about that, I'm open. And then I also want to pursue the CISA Plus certification. I do want to be a cybersecurity analyst as well. There's a lot of things in cybersecurity that I want to do, but I actually love analyzing. It's very fun. Like, I can really sit there and do it for hours and not get bored. So those are my goals upon graduation. Thanks everybody. I've really enjoyed this internship. I don't regret it at all. It was between this and the capstone and the internship. I would encourage any and everybody to do this. If you know anybody who's up next for a capstone or to do an internship, I encourage them to do the internship. It's a really good environment, especially if you apply yourself. Then, you know, it's a good environment to kind of network with classmates too. You never know who you can help out. You never know who can help you out down the road. All right. I guess we're going to do a Q&A after the next presentation and not this one.
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. All righty. Thanks, everyone.
Great job, Scott. That was awesome.
Thank you.
All right, Blake, are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready. Okay. Get this set up. All right. So I did mine on object-oriented programming. The agenda for my presentation will be as follows. I'll have a brief introduction. We will look at some of the languages that utilize object-oriented programming, then look at a few alternatives to object-oriented programming. I'll better define what object-oriented programming is and show some examples of how classes play a part in object-oriented programming. I'll discuss the four main pillars of object-oriented programming, which are inheritance, abstraction, encapsulation, and polymorphism, and end with a brief summary. So for about a year now, I've been working with Java, and by no means an expert, but I like to think I have the basics mastered. Part of the basics of Java is object-oriented programming, or OOP. Understanding the four pillars of object-oriented programming will improve your ability to work with Java and other languages that use object-oriented programming. So the languages. These are some of the popular object-oriented programming languages. Pure languages such as Ruby consider everything objects. Other languages such as Java are designed primarily for object-oriented programming, but still use some procedural processes. Languages such as JavaScript support object-oriented mechanisms. Alternatives. These are some of the alternative programming paradigms I found to object-oriented programming. I'm not going to go into a great deal about each of them, but I will touch on procedural-oriented. As mentioned before, some languages such as Java primarily use object-oriented programming, but use some procedural processes. Procedural programming divides the program into smaller parts called functions. It makes the code less reusable as it does not offer inheritance, and we'll get to more on that later. So define object-oriented programming. This is one of the clear definitions of object-oriented programming that I found. It's from Educative.io. And they say that object-oriented programming relies on the concept of classes and objects. Classes and objects are the two keywords I want to focus on here. As it says, classes are code blueprints used to create an individual instance of an object. So I wanted to look at a real-world example to kind of help better visualize it. Looking at the slide, we see that classes are blueprints for objects, and objects are instances of a class. So think of a blueprint for a house. It has all the information needed, how big it's going to be, how many rooms it will have, and so on. Looking at the picture below, each house is an instance of that blueprint or a single occurrence. And for me, in my head, this is how I defined or how I see object-oriented programming. Objects are are instances of a class, and classes are blueprints for objects, and it just goes around in a circle. So I want to discuss classes next. So earlier I said that blueprints or classes contain all the information about a house object. So let's create our own class to use for the example for the presentation. Let's call it a cat class. I have two cats, Kiki and Mittens. The mom is Kiki and the daughter is Mittens, but them being mother-daughter won't be important to the topic. So here we can see our cat class, and the cat class contains variables and methods, or things it knows and things it can do. So the name, age, weight, and color all describe the cat object, and play, eat, and drink all describe what the cat object can do. So now we have two instances of the cat object, one for Mittens and one for Kiki. This leads us to one of the four main pillars of object-oriented programming, inheritance. I'm going to keep with the animal theme and add two more classes. So inheritance. Inheritance is when a child class inherits data from a parent class, or the parent class extends variables and methods to a child class. Child classes can have their own additional variables and methods as well. So now looking at this, we have an animal and a dog class. The animal class contains all the variables and methods, and the cat class and the dog class just extends the animal class. So meaning when we create a new cat object, we have access to all these variables and methods without having any code in the cat class, other than putting extends at the end of class. Same for the dog class. Inheritance in basic terms is where one class acquires the variables and methods from another class. So now abstraction. Abstraction can be applied to both classes and methods. Abstract classes cannot be instantiated, but they can have subclasses. Abstract methods are declared without implementation. So let's start with abstract classes. Looking at the example from inheritance, technically I can create an animal object that would have the same attributes as both the cat and the dog class. For example, the animal object being an animal object is a little vague. We don't know what kind of animal it's supposed to be. However, we do know the variables and methods for it, but that's it. What if we don't want to allow the instantiation of the animal object? We would simply add the keyword abstract to the animal class. Adding this adds some security and won't allow anyone to be able to create an instance of the animal class. Now, abstract methods. As we said earlier, abstract methods are declared without implementation. The abstract keyword is added to the method, but the method is built without any code in the method body. Instead, when you use the method in a subclass, you must implement the method there. The best way I could demonstrate this was to use a code snippet. Here you can see in the animal class, there is three abstract methods for play. eat, and drink. There is no code entered for these methods, but in the cat class, we have the same methods, but with code in the method body. So that's where it's built in the cat class. Encapsulation. Encapsulation is the hiding of attributes of a class. These attributes can be accessed only through methods. Geeks for Geeks, a website that's got a really ton of good information. They say it the best, that encapsulation is a protective shield that prevents data from being accessed by code outside of the shield. This adds a layer of security to the program. Encapsulation is done by declaring private variables and creating public getter and setter methods. Think of a pill in this example. All the contents within the pill are protected by the capsule around it. Encapsulation provides more benefits than just security. It also makes the code more reusable and easier to maintain. So here's a code snippet of encapsulation at work. We have private first name and last name variables, and these are accessed through getter and setter methods below. These methods do just what they sound like they do. The setter method sets the name, and the getter method gets the name. For time's sake, I'm not going to go into great detail about the code. This is just what it looks like. Polymorphism. Polymorphism is a combination of two Greek words, poly, which means numerous, and morphos, which means forms. So polymorphism means numerous forms or many forms. Polymorphism can occur in two different ways, method overloading or method overriding. Method overloading is when multiple methods within the same class have the same name but function differently. This is also known as compile time polymorphism. Method overriding is a method in the child class behaving differently than the parent class, or it overrides the parent class. This is known as runtime polymorphism. Method overloading is kind of straightforward. I said it's multiple methods within the same class that have the same name but function differently. This is also known as compile time polymorphism. So I've added an add class with two methods. Both have the sum, both named sum. One takes in two arguments and the other takes in three arguments. They can have the same name only if the arguments are different. And then method overriding is when the child class behaves differently than the parent class. We can have a speak method in the animal class that just says hi and create new classes that extend the animal class, which allow each new animal to call the speak method. But each animal speaks differently and doesn't really say hi. If you call it the dog method of speak, it would say wolf, the cow would be moo, the owl would be hoot, and the cat would be meow. The methods in the child class behave differently than the parents, than the parent class, because they have been overridden. So with a solid foundation of object-oriented programming, you'll be able to write clean, organized code that is highly reusable. It also makes programs easier to understand and more efficient. Now I wanted to do kind of a live demo. Okay. So can y'all see the eclipse?
Yep.
Here? Okay. All right. So here I have a cat class. So that's the same thing as was before. It has variables and methods, things it knows and things it can do. So I'm going to create a cat object. That is a cat object. So now we can name the object. We can add all the variables and have it run the methods as well. So I'm not going to do all of them, but so it can run all of these variables, methods here. So there we go. And that is just the program, the cat object as it is right there. So now what I want to do is we're going to delete this. And then we're going to do the inheritance part of it. So what I'm going to do is delete everything from the cat class here. And then I'm going to go to the animal. Got this copied and pasted. So now this is the animal class, and everything is in the animal class. And now we are going to extend the animal class. There's nothing in the cat class, and extends the animal class. So that's for both the cat and the dog class. So now whenever we go back here, we can create cat object again. And we can create a dog object. But we can still access these variables. That's set just fine. And this is all the variables that we have access to. And these are the methods: drink, eat, and play. So we can set all of these. As well. But I can still make an animal object. And we don't really want that to happen. We could, yeah. Okay, so yeah. So we don't really want that to happen. So let's make the animal class. Oh, I already had it as abstract. That's why it was showing that error. So now if we go back, it created it, no problem. And if I go back and add abstract to it, cannot instantiate type animal. So now we can't create an object of animal. So that is the abstraction part of it. So let's make drink method. So it's telling us that we can't have anything in the method body. So we'll delete that. And then we will add it to the cat class. And then we got to add it to the dog class as well. then when we run that, we'll get the cat is drinking, and then the other one would be dog. So that was abstraction and inheritance. So encapsulation, we can do set this to private. And then what you do with this, there's a shortcut. Do source, generate getters and setters. And we're just going to do it for a name. So now we have a problem of trying to set the name for the cat object and the dog object. So now we have to just do this. Use the method of set name. Be able to set the name, and then to be able to retrieve the name, call the cat object again, get name, then we print that out, it will be right there. So that is quickly encapsulation, and then polymorphism. For the method overloading one, that would be having a method with the same name more than once. So we'll do play, and then it'll take in a argument, if I could spell. Do that one. So we have the same method, play and play. One takes in an argument and the other one doesn't. So I'm going to add one thing to the cat class. It will be a string toy equals catnip toy. And then I'm going to go back to main method. We're going to call cat the cat object to play. And there's two. So we're going to pick the one that takes in the argument of toy. And then we got to do cat reference our cat object and then reference the toy. We'll call that. Plays with toy. So that was method overloading, and then method overriding. That is going to be where we just add, instead of in the animal class, we have eat and it just says the animal eats. We can go to our dog class and add eat to it, and whenever we call our dog object again, that shouldn't be capitalized, but that's okay. Call it, it should say the dog eats instead of the animal eats. So it's a lot of stuff, but that's all I have.
Right, awesome job. Well done. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
All right. Does anybody have questions for either Scott or Blake?
I got a question for Blake, actually.
Okay. What you got?
How did you get interested in that?
In what part?
Man, I couldn't describe it if I wanted to, man.
It's a lot. I didn't realize that it was going to be so much. I picked a broad topic. Mm-hmm. In hopes to like just be able to fill the 15 minutes. But after I was like halfway through, I said, oh my gosh, this is going to be way too much. This is going to be a lot of information. No, but
it was good.
That's understanding that is like the main concepts of the object-oriented programming.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of databases. I don't know how many of you have taken database classes, but yeah, with the relational databases, the classes and methods.
Well, and I'm definitely not a programmer. This is Tina, everybody. Hi. but what one thing about programming versus cybersecurity or something else is it kind of stays the same, because I don't want to tell you how many years ago, Blake, that I learned what you just talked about. I mean, I shouldn't say I learned it. I heard it in class a really long time ago and refused to learn programming. I've never been into that, but it's kind of stable as far as, I mean, I'm sure it's changed a lot over the years, but it, just like what you described is how it's been for a long, long time, is my point.
Right, so the least, concepts.
Yeah. Right, right.
I mean, at least that's the upside, I guess, of being on the programming side, is things don't change like every day, like a new malware, a new virus or whatever. It's like every other day, you know, there's something new out that you have to learn in cybersecurity. But at least once you learn the programming concepts, which they're very hard to learn, but if you could master that, they kind of stay the same. So
Just a new syntax every now and then with a different language.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And even my programming people tell me, because, you know, like I said, it's not my area of strength, that if you kind of learn one language and you're good at it, then the other ones come really easily after that. Which I don't know if that's true or not. You know, I liken it to languages. Just because I can learn Spanish doesn't mean I can learn German, right?
Good point.
Well, I know both, so.
Oh, wow.
Just saying. I don't think they're quite equal, but it was very good. Both of you did an awesome job, Scott, as well. I mean, very interesting stuff. So thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah. While we have Blake here, can you tell us what the best times to use, you know, encapsulation versus method overloading versus method overwriting, etc.? Is it just programmer preference or?
No, it's a lot to do with security and readability and reusability. So you can use the code more efficiently. It's easier for other programmers to understand it. Then it won't allow somebody to accidentally create something that they shouldn't create whenever they're programming.
Gotcha. And does anybody else have any questions? Because I have some for Scott. Get ready, Scott.
I was born ready.
When you were talking about the static and dynamic analysis, yes, it reminded me a lot of SAST and DAST. Are the tools that you use for the static and dynamic analysis the same for like static app security testing and dynamic app security testing?
To be honest with you, I'm not sure, but there's a possibility. I mean, it's about the principle though, right? If the principle is to just test out what something does, then technically, yeah. Or if you just, it depends on what the goal is, because malware analysis is just one thing that you can use those tools for.
Okay.
So I think it just depends on what your goal is, the immediate goal is.
Since I think 2019, we've worked on this thing called the loyalty app. It's been a Purdue project.
Okay.
And we have it mostly done, but now Nate and I think it was Sean, maybe Daniel, and I were talking about bringing it to you security people to SAST and DAST test. But I know it would be performing the static and dynamic tests on the code, and we have to figure out how to load it all up to AWS to host it so that we have a URL for you guys to test for the dynamic. But yeah, that, it just reminded me of that when you were talking about that.
Oh, okay. I think I see what you want to do. I think it sounds like you just want to So the two. Okay, so for example, let's use the any.run that we used in the demonstration. All that would do is, let's say you upload. Well, if you have it as a file format, then yeah, you can upload it into any.run, and then you can, you know, kind of go from there and see how it reacts on a whatever operating system that you want to host it on or that you want it to run on. Unless you want it to run in the cloud. Like if you want it to run in the cloud, that's different.
Yeah, it would be cloud.
If it's cloud based, yeah. So that's a little bit different. That's a bit different. I am not that learned on how that will work quite yet, because most of malware analysis is just going to be a file that you're looking at to see what's on it and what it does. As far as something running in a cloud environment, that's interesting. I don't know why, but I didn't think about it like that. Which makes sense though.
I think though that what you were talking about with the analysis and what we were talking about doing with the code, testing the SAS and DAST, I think those two are very similar. I was just wondering if the tools, because I'm not that familiar with it. I know the basics, the concepts. But
okay, I got you.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if the tools would be the same.
Now, I think you might be looking for more like vulnerability management or vulnerability testing or something like that. Like what you want to see where the holes are.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, yeah. So that'd be more like a risk assessment, actually. Okay.
All right. Yeah, a couple other people have their hands up, so.
Oh, do I call on them?
If you want.
Oh. I don't know who had their hand. Oh, let me look at the, okay. Lucian? Did I say that right?
Yes. Awesome. I did have a question. Did you try the, because I saw the website that you used to run.
They have the free
version, and they also, you have to pay.
Yes.
They have a membership. Did you try to use the Cuckoo? They have a online too. I mean, you can download, install, which is a very cumbersome sandbox to install.
Yes, I didn't, only because I can pretty much do the same thing with, I can easily just go spin up a VM on my machine right now. I use VMware, and pretty much do the same sort of thing. So I didn't really bother doing that. But I wanted to use any.run because that's an easy website that anybody can kind of go to and play with if they like.
Okay, I didn't know what would be the advantages of using that over Cuckoo, because they also have like a free website where you can upload or you submit an URL or a hash. So I don't know, what's the difference? Do they have more signature based, or do they have a better way of presenting your statistics? Maybe, but I don't know. Thank you though.
That would have been a really good thing to test out. I could have did like a side by side compare. You know what? I'm gonna do that in my spare time and just play with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a weirdo. I'm a weirdo like that. I like playing with stuff and testing stuff out, man. That's why I like malware analysis. I'm just a weird guy.
Thank you. Good luck.
You're welcome. Thanks.
We're all weird in our little way in the tech field, I think. You know, like Blake, he loves the back end code. I love the front end code, and excited about malware.
Yeah, I actually have a little bit of a story of how I even got there, but I'll save that for after James's question.
Actually, my question's more, or my comment's more towards Angela. Angela, what you're talking about with SAST and DAST is a code security review done by the a programmer who is not involved in the actual coding of the application, as well as a security review dynamically done at runtime, effectively a vulnerability test, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
My recall of the articles I had to read on it for class. So yeah, there's going to be some overlap between what Scott was showing us and those processes, but there's going to be a whole lot more to it, because it'll be like the static review is done line by line by an actual programmer who understands the code but didn't write it, looking for logical errors or ways that they can be exploited.
I forgot about that class. What class was that again, James? Because I think I remember that class. I just, so many classes I can't remember them all.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly which class it was in, but I think it actually came up in multiple classes for the IT programming.
Okay. Oh, for IT programming, because, okay.
Getting the IT degree with just a concentration in cyber. So I didn't have classes outside of cyber as well.
Yeah, thanks for that information. It's written in PHP, and the only one who knows it who's still here is Ryan, and he's pretty busy, so I'll see if he can do a SAST analysis. He was starting to do it, and he wasn't sure what tool to use. So, because we've never done it here before, but we do want to.
I believe Daniel's going to help us with the tools.
Yeah, Daniel's going to help us. But if
we're going to pick a few open source tools that we're going to use.
Okay. So you can use a SAST for a tool for the SAST.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yep.
So real quick, I just want to kind of share a quick nerdy story. I don't know if anybody can relate to this. So how I even got to even be interested in malware analysis is because, so as you know, when you're a broke college student, you try to find free stuff. What comes with free stuff? Something wrong most of the time. So I used to call myself the BitTorrent King, because all I had was my laptop, but I could download any software I needed or whatever I needed off the internet to help me get through school. And sometimes I get compromised. So what happens when you get compromised? Well, whatever's not working right, that's the first step, really. So you go in, you go to Google, and you just literally type out exactly what the problem is, and you kind of deduce it down from there and try to figure out how to deal with whatever you got going on. So that's when I started to kind of get a good interest in just testing stuff, not necessarily malware analysis per se, but just testing things out and figuring out if something is good or not. So that's why those tools are kind of valuable, is because I would be able to upload one of those documents to, let's say, VirusTotal, and let's see if it comes back as if it's been reported as malicious in multiple places. I can see now if it has or not. And also keep in mind, if anybody wants to play around with anything like VirusTotal or any of those static analysis tools, just because it doesn't say that it's malicious, that doesn't mean it's not malicious. That's just been what's reported. Because you might have been the first person to deal with whatever you're dealing with, and turns out it is malicious. So just an FYI.
Right, like with your dynamic test, there were problems, but it didn't say that it was malicious.
Right,
it can be warnings.
right. It's warning, but also something can be reported as malicious, and there'll be nothing wrong actually. It's just reported as malicious. It could be a case where maybe it might be a rookie with a machine that has like 2 gigs of RAM, and you're trying to run, I don't know if anybody knows of this thing, it's this video game engine called Mugen. It's like a big file. So if you're trying to run something like that on a 2 gig RAM device, and yeah, your machine starts running slow, that person might feel like, man, this thing is slowing my machine down. I'm going to report it as malware. Oh, that malware, you just ain't got no RAM.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I've done that for decades. Why is my computer running like this?
Yeah, hey, but that's how you learn sometimes, because you don't have information readily available. And a lot of times you don't know what you're looking at yet. Where most people are in the learning phase. So, I mean, Google is your best friend.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong.
In programming too.
All right, because chances are somebody else. Yeah, my brother says that. My brother's sort of kind of into it. But yeah, a lot of times, whatever you Googling, you're not the first person to deal with it. I feel sorry for the person who first posted the question and you realize it was 5 years ago.
Oh,
that's the person I feel bad for.
Yeah. Crickets.
Yeah.
I wonder how they got that resolved.
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen that a ton. Even throughout when I'm doing some of these labs, like those immersive labs, my goodness, the malware analysis labs and the immersive labs are crazy. I've had to Google so much of that. It'll take me like forever because I'm sitting there like, man, I don't understand what the answer they're looking for. You think it's one thing, but no, they want you to dive a little bit deeper. So
yeah.
You'll type in, like you could type in the actual question that they're asking. You're not going to find that answer anywhere. What you can find is once you get a grasp of how malware analysis works, you know how to search. You know what phrases to use to search.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell the soft dev interns that Googling is a skill.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
Search engine optimization. That's an actual thing.
Yep. SEO.
Yeah, there's people that get paid big tons of money who just know how, who just know SEO.
Yep.
Yeah, it goes both ways.
Are you still interested in learning JavaScript?
Me?
I thought it was you that was wanting to learn JavaScript.
I am petrified of programming. I know I need to learn. I know I need to learn something though. It'll probably be Python. No.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Java,
I thought
though?
It was you, but it might have been somebody else. Well, it probably was somebody else.
I'm interested in knowing how to read it though. I need to learn better how to read it. That way, make me better at malware analysis.
Yeah, just get the code and concepts like Blake had down, and you can read any of the C languages.
Whew, man. C++ is another one that I don't know. Devil's language.
Yeah. See, that's what I took in college. I took C and then C++.
And then they came out with C#.
Yeah, I didn't learn either one, by the way.
Oh, you just took it.
I took them. I had a good team. Teamwork is all good when you don't know stuff.
Wink, wink. I get it.
Yeah. You guys would wish for teams, you know, because we don't have a lot of teams here. My program, we had a team all the time. So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But no, Scott, you're going to stay in. Scott's going to stay and do his Security Plus, right? If we help you with Security Plus, you can stay and help the team.
Yeah, man, I don't mind, man. I just like learning. If I'm not learning, I'm not living.
Well, exactly. You don't have to stop just because you graduate. You can stay.
Yeah,
there
I do.
There is Kita.
Yeah, that is my next. That's my next step because I've gone through all of this, master's degree and all this, and I don't even have my Security Plus.
Yeah, no, like, you definitely need to clean up on all five with that. So.
Yeah. I know it.
A couple $100, you can do it.
I know it.
But there's so many, there's a lot of students studying for that. And there's a lot of study groups. There's actually a class running in BTRAC starting in November. It's 288. I know it's undergrad. You can't take a class. But the point being is there's a class that we created. So anybody that took 286, which is Security Plus, gets to take 288, which is like 10 more weeks of the same thing. So you can study for it.
Mm.
So there's there's a group of students in there. You could go over there and work with them and mentor them. They're undergrads.
Cool.
Just saying.
Cool. I hope we do add that to the internship program, and I wouldn't mind coming back to help out with something like that.
Yeah, no. And we do a lot of cert prep. I mean, there's a lot of cert prep going on through our clubs and stuff. So if you're not already in Slack and Discord, you can definitely stay connected there because we have groups there all the time doing study stuff.
I think I am in the Discord now.
Yeah. Yeah, there's cert prep groups and you could join up. Okay. But feel free to stay in PGIP.
I need a break, though.
Well, yeah, yeah, it's recommended to take at least 2 weeks off.
Yeah. Only two?
at least, minimum.
Man, 2 weeks goes by like 2 days. Y'all know that.
Yeah, go to Hawaii and come back.
Yeah.
Well, you guys did great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Anybody has any more questions? Nope. Oh, all right. Thanks, Scott and Blake. You did wonderful. I learned a lot.
Thanks.
Yeah, very interesting.
Thank you.
Have a good night, everyone.
You too.
Bye, guys.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bye.